Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. The topic we're going to be learning today is the halachas of charity, of giving tzedakah. We are in Siman Lamed Aleph, the 34th chapter in the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch. We're going to look at seven basic concepts. Number one, who needs to give? Number two, how much must one give? Number three, to whom it is considered giving tzedakah? Number four, how to give? Number five, turning people away? Number six, committing to give? And number seven, the recipient's attitude to asking. One may ask, when thinking about this entire section over here, as why do there need to be halachas of giving? I mean, say, I'm giving charity, it's a good thing, I should give it. I should give it the way I want to. And it's very important is that when Hashem says about Avraham Avinu that he was special because he's going to be the protagonist, he's going to be the patriarch of a great nation. He's going to do charity, tzedakah, umishpat, and justice. There needs to be justice, there needs to be law when it comes to charity. Rav Hirsch points this out in the Chumash, that if it's just well-intended, we're going to do the wrong thing. If we just want to do what we think is right and it's subjective, well, then you're going to have many very interesting causes that you may support, and some of them could actually not just be neutral, but negative and dangerous. One needs to have justice. One needs to have rules as to how one gives. Let's learn some of those rules when it relates to this. So let's start off about who needs to give. The mitzvah the Torah tells us is posayach tiftach es yodcha loy, that the Torah says you should open up your hands to those who request. Your brother should live among you. You have this responsibility to do it, to take care of this. And in fact, so much so that the Gemara tells us that this is a sign of a person who is a Jew. And if a person is not naturally charitable, a person is stingy, a person is not willing to help others, the Gemara tells us we should look into the Yichus. Maybe there perhaps is a problem with their heritage, with their culture, because they are not doing what is Jewish. Let's look at the four basic questions in this concept. Who is responsible to give tzedakah? The answer is all Jews are mandated to give tzedakah, to give charity. What about poor people? Are poor people mandated to give tzedakah? The answer is, it depends. If poor people must give charity, even if it's a very little amount, unless they simply do not have enough to live. In that case, they do not need to give tzedakah because they are the recipients of tzedakah. But if a person is living a tight lifestyle and it's not easy, they are absolutely responsible to give tzedakah. How much must a poor person give? So even if it's a little, a person must give, and sometimes that even that little is considered more important than the money and the charity given by a rich person. How do we know such a thing? The Ketzer quotes the Gemara, which describes by the Olas Behema that there are the sacrifice, which is a fully consumed sacrifice by the animals, and it's called a Reach Nichoach. It is a pleasant scent to Hashem. And by the Olas of a burnt offering, which is a bird, which is the cheaper version of it for those who can't afford it, it's also a Isher Reich Nichoach, also a pleasant aroma to Hashem. And the Gemara comments from here, Echad Amarbe v'Echad Amamit u'bilvad shi'yehechaven liboy lavi v'shavashvayim, whether a person is able to do more or less, as long as one is trying to do what's right for Hashem. That doesn't mean to say that a person who has a lot of money and they say, well, I have my heart to Shemaim, so I'm going to give a nominal amount of virtual signaling. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the situation where a person is giving and they feel bad because they're not able to give much more. This is simply all they have to give. That is something which is seen as greatly worthy. Our second concept that we're going to jump into is how much must one give? So the background over here is the Torah tells us that a person never is going to become impoverished because they give tzedakah. In fact, this is one of the sections in the Torah where we're told we're allowed to test Hashem. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that if you give tzedakah, you will be looked after as well. So let's just understand some of that practical applications of this. How much does a recipient need to get? So it needs to be to fill the loss they are experiencing, which means that even if a person is living in a middle-class situation, as now going through tough times, the responsibility to the community looking after them is to fill that need to the lifestyle, the stopgap until they're able to regain control of their ship. They need to live the type of life that they're not going to be embarrassed living. Obviously, this doesn't mean long-term that this is going to be that we're going to finance them al-Ma'ad. They may have to downsize houses or move neighborhoods or do things that perhaps to alleviate the issue. But in the meantime, if there's a stopgap measure One has to ensure that they're living the standards that they were living beforehand. What happens if this person was living very high standards, so the dignity does need to be preserved for those high standards, even in the short run, certainly? What is the least responsible from community charity? So let's say the community charity has got a limited budget and people are coming. So how much must they give? What's the minimum the community charity must provide for the people in need? So the minimum that the community is responsible for is money to stay the night and two meals. That's the very basic things, so room and board. How much must the person give to Tzedakah? Meaning to say let's turn to the giver. The responsibility is, although one fulfills the biblical obligation with even a little amount, but the responsibility is what's called ma'aser k'safim, which is 10% of their assets. Does that mean every year, or how does this work exactly? So the way it works is, in the first time they give tzedakah, the ma'aser k'safim, it needs to be 10% value of all of their assets. However, from then onwards, it's 10% of their earnings of every year. Is this the optimal amount? So technically speaking, 20% is the optimal amount. The 10% is a midah beinonis, is the in-between measure as well. This is worthwhile thinking about because many people are not necessarily there. This is something which needs to be strived to and certainly to get to that 10 as well. Is there a cap? Yes, a person's not allowed to give more than 20% of their assets, even if they want to. So you say, okay, well, let's get out to business. Is this 10 or 20%, is it a gross or net salary? So I'm bringing in X amount. Is what my contract says, or is it what my tax bill says after I've taken the tax out? So it's net, meaning to say after tax is paid, it's 10% of what remains. What can be deducted and included in this calculation? So payroll, income, and property taxes do not contribute to the salary that one calculates from. So those are removed first. And then one looks at the remainder as well. So if a person is earning $100,000 on that's the contract, and let's say for argument's sake, they are paying 30% when taking out payroll, income, and property tax. So one's only looking at the 70,000 of that 10%, which is 7,000, would be the ma'aser k'safim. There's a discussion about taxes and business expenditure. So let's say one is the owner of one's business, not an employee, but one's the owner of the business, and one has to pay taxes on the real estate of the store. And when it has business expenditures, they are not included. So let's say that one has to pay the insurance of the building. One has to pay, and this is, we're talking about a single owned business, right? We're not talking about a corporation, but a person who is actually owning the business. So those expenses that have to come out of the profits, those are considered expenditures, and they are not included in the amount one calculates. So those have to be taken out first, and then the remainder is where the ma'aser k'safim comes from as well. That's what the Kisser says, that household expenses are also excluded. Most poskim, the Avos Chesed, that's the Chafetz Chaim, disagree with that. Household expenses come after ma'aser k'safim is taken when it comes to this as well. This is a very fascinating and obviously many details related to the sugya, and questions should be asked about applying and trying to be able to do this correctly. Is there a cap after death? So yes, the answer is 33% is the cap after death, one third of one's assets. What if the needs are luxurious? So let's say one is giving to a cause, but the needs are luxurious. The shul is that one's supporting making is absolutely gorgeous, and one says, I don't know if I need to be so gorgeous. We'll just take, you know, the lower range contractor. We'll make it a little easier. In that case, that's not the right correct attitude. Rav Rimon once had a situation where he was giving there was a soldier who was injured in the war, and he was giving him a cell phone, and he went to a donor and said, I'd like you to sponsor the cell phone for this soldier. And the donor said, what phone are you getting for him? So he said, I'm getting for him the iPhone 15, which at the time was the most recent phone. And the donor said, why did you have to get him such an expensive phone? So Rav Rimon said to him, well, if you were getting a phone, what would you get for yourself? And that's the answer. If you're making your own house, you wouldn't spare any expenses, and you have a shoddy contractor and not paint the corner, because it's your house. You take pride. So when it's the shul and when it's the institution you're building, you do the best. That's the same attitude as well. Let's move to our next concept. To whom is considered giving stock? I mean, to say, if let's say I'm deducting the amount that I have, I have my salary coming in, I've worked out what my taxes are this year, and I'm having that on a monthly basis, when the paycheck comes in, an automatic amount of the ma'aser k'safim goes to a separate account, and now I need to give that money from that account. What am I allowed to use that for? So a few things. Can I use my stock of money to pay for a mitzvah? So the answer is no, because that's double dipping, meaning I have the responsibility to give to the poor, not to discharge that obligation that one has in another way as well. So what are examples where one should not be using Maaseh Ksofim, one's tzedakah money? So one should not be paying shul membership nor school tuition from Maaseh Ksofim. We all like to try to double dip. The same thing happens when it comes to secular taxes. People like to figure out ways to double dip. It doesn't work. It does the same way it doesn't work in secular taxes. It doesn't work when it comes to the tzedakah tax of the 10% as well. These are things where one is obligated to give independently of this. What happens if I encounter a mitzvah that if I would not be able to do, that if I do not use my Maaseh Ksofim, I would not be able to do? In that case, if one would not be able to do it otherwise, one would be able to use one's Maaseh money for it. What examples are there of these? So for instance, one has the opportunity of helping make somebody else's wedding, but the expenses are just far too much for, now, although one's obligated to give stock and to do Achnasas Kala, one just doesn't have the wherewithal, so one can dip into one's Maaseh Ksofim account. One can write a Sefer Torah or buy Sforim that are able to be lent to others as well. But if those Sforim, so if let's say I buy a Sforim with it, with my Maaseh Ksofim, so is there anything else that I need to do special about it? The answer is yes. They need to be marked and stamped in them that they were bought to the Maaseh Ksofim, so that when one's estate is being divided, the children are not allowed to inherit them because they're not meant to be personal assets. Also, one needs to ensure that others will borrow them because they're not meant to be one's personal item. One can't be using one's stock of money to buy something which one keeps as an heirloom on one's shelf for oneself. That's not appropriate. Is feeding my children considered tzedakah? So, technically speaking, no. The answer is no. Well, that's not tzedakah. That's a responsibility as a parent. In the times of the Gemara, that was the responsibility extended to the age of 6 years old. Today, the convention is until they grow up. With millennials, one wonders when that is. But the general idea is until they are self-sufficient, that is considered a responsibility, and therefore one cannot give tzedakah to them. What about my older children? So let's say one has a child who is self-sufficient financially, but they have needs, and they can't pay all of their bills, and they're not able to take care of things. One would be considered responsible to give them tzedakah, and that would count. One would be able to use Maaseh Ksofim for that as well. Similarly, what happens if a person's in a situation where their parents are in need of financial help? May they use tzedakah money for their parents? The answer is yes. That is irresponsible as well. In fact, is there a triage in giving? The answer is yes. The parents and one family in need would come before people who are poor, who are outside of one's realm. That's where it starts, and that's based on the pasuk, where the pasuk tells us the triage: la'achicha, to your brother; la'niecha, to your poor people; v'levyoncha, and to those who are destitute; ba'aretzecha, on your land. So that means to say, first comes family, then comes the poor people in one's district, and then the ones in Israel. So it's important to realize this, because just as a side point, there is a notion today called what's called EA, effective altruism, which demands morally that a person gives to the most effective stretching of one's dollar. Sounds like a very nice idea. It has many moral flaws to it, including the fact that today the EA is advocating spending money on space lasers to avoid asteroids hitting the Earth, because that is going to save the most amount of people in the next few centuries, as opposed to just the people who are necessarily suffering in front of one. The Torah does not view it that way. The Torah views it as relational, which means to say that it's based on the constellation of people that I am put in. So I cannot ignore people who are in front of me, even though I might be able to leverage my dollar in a more effective way overseas or elsewhere. Next question, what about a gabbaite stocker? What should they do? The answer is a gabbaite stocker needs to be very careful about a conflict of interest. So although, generally speaking, I take care of my family first, a gabbaite stocker cannot use communal funds to take care of their family and friends first. That would be a conflict of interest. May one give from a Jewish charity to a non-Jewish recipient? The answer is yes. That's because of Darchei Shalom. So let's say you have a food pantry, and the food pantry is serving Jewish people, and they're non-Jews who also are the clientele. One is allowed to give to them as well. In an equal world, who is best to give to? Meaning, what's the best type of charity? The Kitzur says to help support a Talmud Chacham who is impoverished, a person who is pious in Torah. And is in financial need as well. That is the seen as the optimum level as well. What if he doesn't want to accept help? So in that case, it's best to help out that family by buying them household needs or extending them loans in a way that they can be self-sufficient. Concept number four, how do we give? So the Torah tells us that wealth is a turning wheel, and we need to be cognizant that we may be in the giving seat now, but there's nothing to say that in two generations' time, or next generation, or in four generations' time, that our children will be the recipients. We need to set the tone for how it works to be on the giving end as well. So a few basic things. What if I give a lot, but I'm just not a personable guy. I just don't like to give. I don't like to be nice to people. So the Kitzur says, if one gives with a dour personality, with a sour face, even if one's giving a lot, one loses the merit of giving because one is giving in a bitter way. Why is this? Because part of the giving is sharing the emotional burden of being in a tough place. And if one's not able to do that, that diminishes, that loses the opportunity of what that giving was supposed to be. What is the best kind of charity I can give? What's the best kind of tzedakah? The best is to set up a job or a partnership for a person so that they do not need to feel like they're getting charity, that they are actually able to be self-sufficient. What is another important manner of giving? So the best is the less public it is. Although today everybody, you know, savors publicity and all these campaigns and buildings and names and so on, technically speaking, the best is that the recipient does not know from whom they got. And even better is if the giver does not even know to whom they are giving, because this is our responsibility as agents of Hashem. Does this mean that dedications are not allowed? So that's not true. Technically speaking, dedications are allowed and in fact encouraged, because it encourages others to give. But that is when it refers to a communal building, a communal institution. Then one is allowed to and should have one's name on it, because it'll encourage other people to step up. But if we're talking about a particular poor person and you get a plaque because you supported the Cohen family, that's not appropriate. It's we're talking about a building or an institution. Move to our next concept, turning people away. If I don't have money, can I turn someone away? The answer is no. One should give even a few cents to such a person. So let's say there's people who visit one's door. One should have just, you know, singles or fives or something that one can give to them, so one's not turning people away. It's not appropriate to turn people away. What if I just don't have anything? Then give them emotional empathy. Why is this important? So the Kitzur points out that Hashem is like that with us. Hashem is a father to us who comforts the children who I need, and we need to do that for his children too. Sometimes these mishlochim can be very angry and they raise their voices. How do I respond? They are in difficult situations and they need help. So the Kitzur says, have patience to understand that. Understand that they're not in an easy situation knocking on people's doors. The next concept is committing to give. So when it comes to this, the Torah tells us that tzedakah actually acts as a form of pledge. We learn this, the Gemara in Nedarim talks about this. And that means to say that when a person even says that they are verbally going to give, that pledge is obligating, and a person is responsible to redeem that pledge. I was once looking at the accounts in our shul, and I was surprised as to how many hundreds of thousands of dollars were owed of pledges that were made but just not fulfilled. When one makes a pledge, that is a halachic responsibility to respond and to do that, even if one hasn't written anything down, even if it's an appeal that's made on a Shabbos. So a person commits, that is considered as binding in this respect. How long do I have? One must honor one's commitment immediately. What if I don't have, if I don't want to right now? If one has, but one does not do it right now, one transgresses the Torah prohibition of Baal Ta'acher, of not paying up one's nedarim, or one's neder. When does this set into action? That goes into action immediately. Even though for a regular neder of a korban, that would take three regalim, three festivals. When it comes to tzedakah, it's considered from the time that a person is able to. What if there's no people, poor people around, but I made the pledge? So in that case, one should set aside the money, and when one is able to encounter them, then one would give them as well. What if I committed to the community fund? When does the clock start ticking? So that only starts ticking when one receives the invoice from the communal representative. So if, let's say, it's a shul, then and they send an invoice, at that moment in time, that's when the clock starts ticking and one needs to redeem one's pledge. What if I make a directed donation to somebody? When does that commitment begin? So it begins when I encounter that person. So let's say I say there's a poor person in another place, and I said, you know, I'll help you. So if one's not able to send the funds, which is hard to imagine today, but let's say that one has to give the cash to them, and one only sees them in like 2 months' time, it only starts when one sees them as well, if there's no other way to get it as well. Can a payment plan be set up? So a person makes a big commitment, but one says one's going to do it over the course of time. The answer is yes. One can set up, but that should be stipulated at the beginning and not something which is figured out later on. What right does the tzedakah gabbai have on this? So the collector on behalf of the community representative, has tremendous merit, more even than the giver, because they are in putting themselves in a very difficult situation to solicit funds from those around them as well. We'll look at our last concept now, and that is the recipient's attitude to asking. So a few questions. Number one is, If one needs money, what should one do? So the if one needs money, one should do everything one can to be independent. That means to say taking on a job which may even not be to one's level of honor. One needs to take all the steps necessary not to be a victim, but to work and not to need it. What happens if this isn't enough? So I've taken on 3 jobs. I'm working really hard, but it's just not adding up. In that case, then trying hard not to need is a huge zechus, is a huge merit. But if that's not enough, one should one should accept charity. And if a person does not accept charity in such a situation, one bears the responsibility for not taking when one needs as well. What if it's the other way around? If I take when I don't really need it, I pretend that I'm in need. In that case, the kitzur ends off with the words, Eino meis ad shistarach labrios. God forbid that person will need at a certain point, like they pretended they certainly need. A lot of very fascinating halachas, a lot of mishpat, a lot of laws to tzedakah, to giving. And it's important because when there's laws, then there's what to live up to. And one needs to ask shaylos about this as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein once said that he was at a conference and he was complaining that people ask him silly questions. Like, he gave an example was trying to take a boy's name and apply it to a girl and say, how do you use such a name? He said, but nobody asks me the most important questions, like the halachas of tzedakah. So the person who's sitting in the audience asked him the halachas of tzedakah, and that's when he wrote a tshuva on the topics of priority and hierarchy when it comes to giving of tzedakah. But it's a very important section in halacha. And of course, because we're in the kitzur, we're not sticking just to Orachaim, we're sticking to some of the other sections. Have a wonderful and meaningful